David, let's talk about some very, very serious issues.
Yeah.
And last week, without even knowing, of course, what was going to be happening over the weekend, we started talking about the anxiety and the terrible issues that some of our youth are facing in terms of mental health. Following that discussion on Thursday, we had two horrific attacks in the United States. People are looking at political reasons, although one was left, one was right. And I think that's important, because it's important, I think, not to politicize this. I think we have to look about, because no matter what your political view, it shouldn't be inspiring you to go and shoot and kill a whole lot of innocent people. If it does, there's something else going on. What do you think is going on?
Do you know, the irony, Howard, is that there were three shootings, actually.
There were three?
There was Gilroy, California, in the garlic, at the Garlic Festival.
Oh,
there was
Texas. You're right, actually.
And there was Dayton, Ohio. And I think for me, that's just...
That's how quickly this news cycle moves.
That's how quickly
is that the Garlic cycle. Festival we report on and spoke about it gone.
Yeah, and in a way, you know, again, I say this very... very flippantly, you know, only three people were killed. You know, it wasn't such a huge massacre.
Right,
so, you know, what happened afterwards just kind of dominated the news.
Right.
Well, you know, it is very sad. And I think for me, has been politicized, you know, around, you know, Trump and, you know, his outbursts, his racial outbursts, racist outbursts. But I think, you know, if we had to delve into people who are more susceptible to, you know, doing these things, we look and we look a little bit deeper. One sees that the vast majority of these people have had some kind of early childhood experience, negative childhood experience, some kind of trauma, exposure to violence. And that's the first thing that we've seen, that there's a commonality in the huge majority of, you know, of these shooters, that something happened in their childhood to cause distress, to cause, you know, difficulty. Does this mean that everyone who, has some kind of trauma in life, leads to a shooting? Absolutely not.
Yeah.
But what we do see is that with that, we see some kind of catalyst to the shooting. So a short period before the shooting, what we often see is a breakup of a relationship, a firing from a job, a huge fallout with a family member, bullying, you know, that's escalated to a point where it's unsustainable for the person. So we do see that there's a vulnerability, and then there seems to be a trigger. And that trigger then often leads to an outburst of anger, which we see resulting.
What happens in a society that makes this an option? In other words, the kids that are traumatized and are suffering from pretty much the same thing all around the world. The kids have been bullied, alienated, perhaps have had a childhood trauma. We see other statistics about them not having an active father in their lives. All of these things are not unique only to the United States. Do you think that something is happening there that is allowing this to be one of the options? In other words, a kid that's going through trauma here in South Africa, and you must be dealing with this all the time in your practice, there are probably a number of options, I mean, terrible options, open to them. One might be self-harm. One might be plunging into just a form of depression. I mean, there are a lot of typical, if I could use that word, responses to it. Why would American kids have a response that includes mowing people down?
It's, you know, there was a fascinating article. A man actually wrote to 50, if you want to call them, mass murderers, and asking them, you know, what would have stopped them? What was their motives behind it? He only got 12 responses, but of those 12 responses, And asking the perpetrators this question, and not to politicize it, this is coming from the perpetrators, that it was all about access, that they had the ability to get hold of a gun. They had the ability to express their anger by getting an automatic rifle and causing such mayhem. And I think for me, it's, you know, we've seen other countries now like Australia and more recently New Zealand, that there are strict laws around locking away guns. So there's access to guns, but they're locked away. But in America, I read a statistic which is quite, you know, frightening, that there, you know, roughly about 319 million Americans, And there's a roughly three, you know, between 270 and 310 million firearms, you know, legally available in, you know, in America. That's nearly one firearm for every single person. And a lot of these firearms are not your, you know, your handgun. It's automatic machine guns. And if you saw, you know, that in one of the shootings last weekend, there was an automatic machine gun with barrels attached to it, where one can shoot 100, you know, bullets at one time without unloading, well, reloading. And again, I think for me, that's what's coming out, is that access to such devastating.
So it's interesting because I don't think it's. You said you don't want to get political. Mm. The conversation around a Donald Trump, Obama, etc. I think is where it gets political. Access to gun control actually isn't political. It's something that it's been made to be right. A political discussion, but it isn't. If people have too much access to automatic or semi-automatic weapons, then and that contributes to it, then that is a problem. What is your thoughts? In fact, and I'd like your thoughts from our listeners, 34519 or 0618951019. What are your thoughts about TV games, about PlayStation, about these types of games that are becoming increasingly more realistic? And we've seen it, in fact, with some of the perpetrators that they were even try to live stream their attacks. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, maybe it was the one in New Zealand at the mosque. Where it almost had this feeling that you were watching a TV game.
Right.
What's your thoughts on that? And I'd love your thoughts as listeners as well, please.
Well, I think it's an important question because there's, you know, often parents ask, you know, will my child be more violent? Will I, you know, there's graphic games and there's blood and there's shooting. And the answer is pretty clear that your child or a person has to be really, clearly already in huge amount of distress, clearly psychologically, psychiatrically, disturbed, have problems in order to kind of lose touch with reality that one kind of, then transitions from a game into, you know, into something more real, into an actual shooting. So, I mean, then, you know, the statistics bear it out. There are millions and millions of young people, even adults, who play these games and don't go, you know, shoot and act out what they see on the screen. So I think for me, there's no real basis to support that. But, you know, at the same time, I do think it's important that we don't just allow our children to play whatever they want, whenever they want, and that we do understand that that there's so much available out there, you know, with social media, with these games, and they are very, very graphic. And even if your child isn't off, you know, thank God, not going to go out and stab someone or shoot someone as they see in the game, that it can normalize, you know, aggressive behavior.
But a kid that isn't predisposed to this, is he going to be affected by this?
Unlikely.
Okay.
Because there's this.
And I think that's important because as parents, we grapple all the time. What are the things that are going to damage our children to the point that, because we're all damaging our children, let's not kid. You know, there's probably, most of what you deal with is how parents have damaged their children. As you will damage your children. Right. It's just part of the human condition.
Right. And I think for me, there's no such thing. I think it's a good point. There's no such thing as perfect parenting. You know, we try and we do a good enough job. And actually, we need to make mistakes and we need to admit them to our children that we're making mistakes because that's how, you know, they become resilient and that's how they grow and that's how they learn to deal with difficult things when they become adults. So actually, it's a very important part of parenting that you don't do things perfectly. But certainly, I think for me, you know, understand your child. Everyone, you know, every child is different and you know your child. You know your child best. So if your child is more sensitive to, you know, to, visual cues, then restrict them. Absolutely. And so use, I would say, common sense and your intuition around your
common
child.
Common sense in parenting.
Yes, sir.
You know, David, you could patent that. I mean, that's a unique concept.
Yeah.
Because I think that's the one thing that, that sometimes we don't do. We're so busy looking for advice and for expertise and reading the books and trying to understand things that sometimes we actually forget that maybe just plain old common sense in parenting is not a bad option.
No, absolutely. When we talk about, you know, what are those golden rules of parenting? Uh-huh. They're the basics. They really are the basics of setting those boundaries and limits appropriately, and just doing really the core parenting things right. And what I mean by right is, you know, obviously setting boundaries and limits that are appropriate. And you'll make mistakes, but that's good parenting. And if you can do that in a consistent, predictable way, wow, you're well on your way to being a good enough parent.
What is your response to the reports that are suggesting that a lot of these kids didn't have a male figure, a dominant male figure in their world?
Right. No, I think there's, I mean, are you talking about people who perpetrate these?
Yes.
No,
yes.
I think there's no basis to that. I think you see people who have got, a very strong single parent or have got a community around them.
So that was exactly my feeling. I've been a bit uncomfortable with these reports, and I'm glad you answered it that way.
No, absolutely.
I was hoping you would.
No, there's no basis to it, because again, you know, you can have a mom and a dad, and you can have the most terrible childhood. Mm. So just because you've got two parents, that certainly doesn't guarantee that you're not going to have trouble.
Perhaps that's what you're saying before, that it's more about, it's not the fact that you've got a single parent or one gender parent is less the issue. It's more about the boundaries and the consistency
and the predictability of their lives. Mm. Absolutely. You know, what's also very interesting, I wanted to point out that, you know, these mass shootings actually are contagious in many ways, because if you've noticed,
yes, I wanted to ask you that, if that's a factor,
that what authorities now, when there is a mass shooting, uh-huh, they actually go on high alert for at least 2 weeks, because it's almost contagious. They see that when there's one mass shooting, that there's a very strong likelihood that they're going to be, that another will follow within a 2 week period.
Isn't that the same with teen suicides or suicide attempts?
Yes, because in some ways, it validates, it's almost like, you know, not makes it okay, but it gives the person a sense that, you know,
permission almost.
Exactly. You know, permission that this can be done. And it also is, you know, when someone is very angry in the world and feels deflated and rejected, you know, in a very obviously macabre way, it's a way of gaining notoriety, of getting noticed, of feeling important. Mm. And so when they see someone else in a similar position gaining this notoriety and getting noticed through this heinous act, it is, as I say, almost contagious.
So to some extent, it puts people like ourselves in a very difficult position, because when there is a teenage suicide or there's an event like this, we have to talk about it, of course. We've got to discuss these things. But to some extent, discussing it and talking about it might be making things worse rather than better. And you've got to weigh this up, because you want to create awareness and you want parents to have a look at their children and say, oh my word, you know, I didn't even think of it. The signs are there. I need to keep a closer eye on my children and have a look at what's going on. But on the other hand, the publicity around it may give permission, in inverted commas, to the kid.
Well, you know, again, in today's social media or going to the internet, you can Google suicide, and on the one side you could get sites that will help and support you and give you ideas on how to overcome feelings of depression and suicidal thoughts. But just as easily, you could get sites that would support you and will give you ways to take your life. So I really do think, for me, you know, I think given the choice, we need to speak about it, and we need to give people, parents, the public, ideas, just those warning signs that we need to look out for in order to identify people who are much more susceptible, and to trust that, and don't hesitate to talk to authorities, or because if you're wrong, okay, you know, you've erred on the side of caution.
There's no downside to it.
There's no downside to it. Yeah. Obviously, if it's done in an appropriate way.
Right. I'd love your thoughts on it. 3451 9 or 061-895-1019. I've been chatting to David Abramson. We're speaking about the anxiety and the terrible stress that our teenagers might be under, and some of the results of that mental strain that people are dealing with.